Hey, this is Dennis Kowalski from the Cryonics Institute. You're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
All right, hello. Welcome on back to Verbal Shenanigans. Hello, everybody out there on the information superhighway listening to us in the comfort of your own home, in the car, on a run, at work. I don't know where you're listening to us, but welcome to the show.
95%, I would say, on the toilet.
You think so? I listen to a lot of podcasts, and it's funny because I don't listen to too many on the toilet. I do a lot of scrolling on the toilet.
Mm-hmm. I think people, like the older generation, they like to sit on there, you know, just take some time, you know, relax. I mean,
are you saying that our podcast is like marketed towards toilet listening?
I feel we should like team up with like Charmin and Mr. Plumber. And those scrubbing bubble things that go into the toilet. I feel we'd be like the perfect grouping, if you will.
Start tweeting. Hey, Charmin, I got the podcast for you.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah, I'm sick of seeing these bears in the commercial. I feel
they
it
need
should be
you
and me. And
yeah.
You know, we're handing, somebody's like, where's the toilet paper? And our hands come out with a roll and be like, Charmin, with the help of Verbal Shenanigans, is going to give you the most comfort while you're sitting down.
Just what people need to sell product is you with like with monkey ass needing to rewipe in the middle of the day. That's
yeah.
I don't know if that's how they're going to really push that product, but I'm in. Again, if we didn't get that Red Bull sponsorship we were looking for last week, still waiting for that. Still waiting to be the official podcast of Red Bull, but if Charmin, if you're listening, if you want us to be the official toilet paper podcast, we're in. We'll do all number two related podcast. We'll do paper towel reviews, toilet paper reviews, napkin reviews. We will sell our souls for anything. So anybody out there, you got a product to push, we will push it.
Yeah, we don't care. I mean, if it's illegal. We're for it, mm-hmm. You know?
But anyway, folks, welcome to Verbal Shenanigans. We are a weekly podcast. We are 270-something episodes into this thing, 5 or 6 years going. And basically, that's Mike. I'm Scott. And each week, we bring on interesting guests and talk about life and other happenings and whatnot. And that's pretty much exactly what we do. Mike, I'm still pumped from Saturday night's Conor McGregor win. I don't know if you saw all 40 seconds of it, but it was fantastic.
I did, man. I mean, he looked like the old Conor. I was really worried going into this one because I think he had two losses in a row in UFC, and then he had the fight with Money Mayweather.
Well,
in between, so I was kind of worried. I'm like, I don't know if he's kind of losing his gel, if he's getting a little too cocky, but it seemed like he kind of dialed down the Conor going into this fight, and it really showed. I mean, just that damn, those damn shoulder blades awesome. Into the nose, man. I'm like, I didn't even know that was possible. I didn't think that was a move.
Yeah, I've been over the last, I don't know, 5 years, 6 years. I've gotten pretty deep into UFC. I really enjoy it. I've never seen someone throw shoulders like that. So there's always something new in the sport. I never knew you can even generate enough power. I mean, if I'm sitting here right now, I feel like me shrugging my shoulders like this is not. I feel like this isn't knocking anybody out. I don't know about you.
I feel we should send that video to Dana White. and just see if we can get you a contract.
What if me versus
What's
Connor?
Up, Dana?
What about just a shoulder fight?
Shiggy, shiggy.
Special stipulation shoulder match.
You see a guy diving for your legs, you're like, what the hell are you doing? My shoulders can't go down there. Ah, you scouted me.
And as I've been saying, and we've had this conversation a couple times over the years, and even went to a few Conor fights together when you were still in Jersey. Conor McGregor is great for the sport. It is pure entertainment. Is he a lunatic? Yes. Has he done a lot of terrible things? Yes. But he is the Mike Tyson of the UFC. He is got to watch television. He's entertaining. He could work a mic. He could sell a pay-per-view. And people forget because he's had a bad run here. Now, he's had a bad run more personally and getting in trouble than he really has fighting. If you think about it, so he lost a boxing match. That's that doesn't even count. Like, everybody knew that was going to happen. And that was the easiest payday of his life. People are like, can you believe they want to run that back? I'm like, yes. You're going to tell Conor McGregor to make $100 million, get punched in the face a couple times, no risk of like being choked out, kicked out. He has no belt to lose, and he can make like $1 billion. Yes, I could see them running that back 10 times in a row.
Easily. Easily. Just the back and forth alone will generate $250 million.
Right. So that was an exhibition, basically. And then he lost to Khabib, who everyone loses to Khabib. The guy is undefeated. And if you go back and you rewatch the fight, Conor was in it, okay? In the third round, he came out. It wasn't the way your memory makes it, like where he got completely done. Yeah, he got smashed the first round, and he got smashed the fourth round. But if you rewatch the fight, he like, what the biggest knock on him is always his gas tank, his endurance. The third round, he actually comes out firing, but it's the him punching an old man in the face. It's him with the sexual abuse, accusations and whatnot. It's the 3 year. It's the length of time he hasn't fought that makes you think like, oh, he's been really, he's been really terrible. Khabib's like whatever it is, 28-0, 24-0, and everyone, because it's easy to hate, it's easy to write, you either want Conor to win or you want him to lose, right? You know, people don't like him. I totally get that. And people love him, and I totally get that. So it's really easy to forget how good the guy was and is. He's only 31, and like the prime of fighters is around that age at 31, 32, 33. And you forget some of the guys he beat and how he beat him, like Aldo. Remember when Aldo was in his prime when he knocked him out in whatever that was, 10 seconds or whatever it was.
13, that was vicious.
Eddie Alvarez, he made him look like a new fighter. Like, the guy beat a lot of guys who were at the top of their game, and you forget what a great striker Conor is. I think the bad publicity really makes it almost a lot of the casual fan or even just people like who see how good some of the other fighters are, like, oh, well, Conor can't hang. The guy can hang, man.
If his mind is in it,
yep.
He's easily one of the most dangerous people in MMA. I mean, it seemed like those last couple ones, he was more worried about running the mouth than the actual fight itself and
right.
Doing the side stuff. I mean, if it was fairly recent, he got the proper whiskey company, right? He bought it like a year or two ago, so he was putting energy into that. But when it's just straight up in your face, let's do this, Conor's going to get you. And if you ain't ready the second that bell rings, as you saw last in the fight Saturday, he's sprinting full force and he's coming after you. I mean,
The guy is pure we watched it with my best friend and his wife and his friend's wife and my wife. Like, people who generally never watch the UFC, he's pure entertainment. People are excited when he wins. His interviews are insane. And this was a perfect fight for him. One, to humble down a little bit. Cowboy Cerrone is like the ultimate company guy, the ultimate take any fight on any amount of time, has a million fights. The guy, in my opinion, has got to hang it up. It's just he's going to have mashed potatoes for brains, and he's not going to hang it up, which is going to be I hate to say this, but here's the guy. He's the type of guy that he does so much crazy stuff out of the ring, like the bull riding and the deep sea diving and the Scott, whatever. He's the kind of guy, I hate to say this, but you're going to hear one day, like, oh, Cowboy was in a terrible accident. He was going 170 miles an hour in his car down the road. Like, he's that kind of guy. Like, I don't think there's any holding him back. And I felt good for the guy. He got the fight. Like, he deserved this fight. He's got to, even as humble, he's got to feel a little devastated at his performance.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, what what kind of tells you how crazy this fighting world is and all? Your grandson got the living crap kicked out of him in 40 seconds,
yep.
And the grandmother is still going over to Connor and giving him a big hug after the fight. And he loved it too and all. I mean, you could tell he's like, I'll get over here and just hugging. I mean,
I think this, oh, no. This version of Connor is an even more marketable Connor. If he can play kind of both sides of the fence a little bit, be a little bit more humble, people like it.
I totally agree. I mean, I feel UFC totally needed. Like, they're nowhere close to like going bankrupt or anything like that. But sit back and you go, who's the biggest names that got everybody to come out and to the pay-per-views and buy in there? In recent history, it's been Ronda,
yep.
Rousey, Brock Lesnar, and Conor McGregor.
I would throw John Jones and in there a little bit too.
Yeah, that's a solid name right there. But for the most part, they haven't had the name or the people they have in there hasn't given the attention where it's like everybody's like, oh. Where's everybody going to be at this Saturday? We got to get together. We got to see this. And all they've been kind of losing that juice. And I think him coming back and looking solid and looking like the Connor that everybody has in the memory is exactly what they need to kind of push this for. Because already now we're getting question marks. In his interview, he's like, I'm very happy staying at the weight I am. And then you hear from Dana White, and he wants to get him back in the ring with Khabib. So that's... it'll be interesting to see, and at least we're all going to be talking about it for a bit.
Yes, and Connor apparently his plan is to fight three times this year. The writing on the wall, Khabib is not fighting until April against Tony Ferguson, which is monster pay-per-view, and I think Tony's the only guy that could possibly beat Khabib. But that's a side note. I don't want to get too deep here. But so Khabib... you know, he's not available basically for 6 months. You know, like, he's not going to turn around and fight Connor a month after that or whatever.
Yeah.
So I could see him taking Masvidal, who has gotten the most amount... that guy's had the most amazing turnaround in his career in 1 year ever. He'd become a household name. So I could see that happening at 170 for the old BMF belt or whatever, selling $1 bazillion. And then I could see at the very end of the year, like, kind of... November, December again, I could see Khabib, Connor happening again and being the biggest fight in UFC again. and then I always had this thought that Connor's going to finish his career on Nate Diaz 3.
I could see. I mean, he's got all open options, like I said. I mean, it only took that one fight to turn around and be like, all right, everything's open, let's do this. I mean... what other guy smashes a bus with a guardrail at the event of his job and they still turn around and be like, come on back. Come on. It's all right. It's cool. It's cool. I'll keep my eye on you, but it's cool.
Because that guy, for whatever reason, encapsulates attention from the entire world. It's not just Vegas. It's not just the United States. It's the entire world is watching when he fights. So it's, you know, I don't know what it is. He's like the ultimate, like, he's like a WWF, like, old school bad guy that's become a real person. He's an actual guy that does things. But if he was never able to back it up, all of this would just be like, well, he's done, you know. But that fight put him right back in the spotlight again.
Even his intro where he's like, like when they're announcing it, and he comes into the middle of the ring, and then all the lights come out, and all the spotlights come on him. That's like,
it's awesome.
Every person in the world wants to have that happen once in their life, just with the arms out and the lights on, and the place is just going absolutely berserk. That's like, that's everybody's bucket list. I don't care. The Pope wishes he could have an intro like that.
Put it this way. Me and my wife, who I watch a lot of UFC, like she'll be asleep on the couch and I'll find a stream of – no, I mean I buy all of the pay-per-views very legally and watch them. I'll find a stream of it and I watch it and she could care less. I'll be like, oh, this happened. She'll go, oh, cool, cool. We enjoy, she enjoys when Conor fights. She's like excited to come with me and hang out. Like, so there's something about this guy that extends more than just the fans of the sport. So I'm not ready for him to be done. I hope we get another 2-3 years of Conor. I mean, I understand it though. You're a multi-millionaire, maybe one day a billionaire. It's very hard for me, for a hard sell to tell, okay, now you got to go get punched in the face and train and sacrifice. Like, you know, you could sell whiskey, you could go be in the WWE, which you can totally see. You can go do movies, video games, whatever. So I could see how that could be really hard to keep that fighting edge after a while. But
yeah, I mean, it'll be impossible to tell, but I got a feeling wouldn't it be the, I mean, as weird as it sounds, like the ultimate Conor ending would be just like the dying of ring and just like that old school Irish style of I'm going to fight until somebody puts me in the ground.
See, but he's one of the guys who he could be one of like the only fighters who actually hangs it up at the right time, who gets a couple more fights, puts $1 billion in the bank. His kids are set for life. His girlfriend's set for life. He's set for life. Right off into the sunset and do other things. He could be one of the all these UFC guys keep coming back and coming back and coming back, and it's kind of sad to see after a while. So
Jim Miller, if you're listening, we apologize. We love you. We want you back on the show.
Jimmy's got a fight coming up. Jim Miller, yeah. I think in a month or so, he's got another fight coming up. Jim's been on a good roll. I think he's won 2 in a row, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. I know he went on a little streak too himself, and I was worried about him, but he bounced back, and he's better than ever. So fingers crossed for the man.
Yeah, every time I always try to make sure I'm like, I could watch it, and then sometimes the last one I think was in like Brazil or something, so it was like the time was off, but... I always like to see. He's had some good fights, man. He's still relevant. Maybe get like a Jim Miller cowboy would be a cool fight, but I think they fought before. But anyway, let's not bore our entire. We're not a sports podcast, guys, but you know, Conor McGregor transcends. Everybody likes to talk about him, and I'm already can't wait to his next fight, whatever it is. I think I gut feeling it's going to be Masvidal, but. Who knows? He could pull something where George St. Pierre comes out of retirement and fights him, and they sell 8 bazillion pay-per-views. the guy, after beating Cerrone in that fight, he basically has UFC by the balls again and can pretty much do whatever he wants. It's going to be Conor's.
If Conor got on a mic one day and says, I want to fight Bigfoot, they would find that mofo somewhere in the woods and stick him in a ring in Las Vegas.
And guess who's in? I'm in. I'm watching it. I'm in.
Who could hear that? They caught Bigfoot, and he's in Las Vegas to fight Conor McGregor. Nah, I don't want to watch that.
He's just in a cage.
They're not getting my money.
They bring him out in a cage. Conor comes down. Just to strut. See, if I'm WWE, I get Conor. Here's the perfect angle for him. Vince McMahon's, you know, he's fading off into the sunset, and he needs a protege. His son's disappointed him. All of a sudden, he's like, I got a mystery protege who I'm leaving the whole company to. And Conor just arises out of and they're just doing that billionaire walk together. They're just trash talking everyone. I'm in. That might bring me back to the WWE that I watched when I was 15 years old.
Yeah, I don't think they would write any scripts. I think in Conor's head, he would think this is just regular life, and he would just keep going with it.
maybe we could set up a Conor Dan Severn fight. I don't know. But We've been putting off a story that you've this is a great segue. I don't know how we segue it, but I guess we've been putting off a story that happened in December-ish, November-ish, December.
Yeah,
you December-ish. That was really close to you, and I don't know. We had the holiday episode. We've had a couple big guests on. The topics that we talked about that didn't quite fit into this, but I think today is a day to talk about something that didn't really happen to you, but happened in your former world, I guess we can say.
So if you go back in the Verbal Shenanigans catalog, say 2, 3, 4 years down the road, you could hear some different instances of my disdain for one of my former employers. It was just a very toxic environment and everything like that. But
Chippendales didn't really work out for you. You guys never saw eye to eye.
Yeah. It was very weird. I thought it was like Disney. So I came in full costume. And then there was these naked men hanging around. I'm like, this is not in my vision.
Really, they wanted you to just be the cashier. But you were like, well,
I got naked, and they're like, well, that really doesn't help. People are walking out before they get the cash, you know. At least let them get in before saying that.
But, right, exactly.
But, I would say probably maybe about a week before Christmas or something, one of my coworkers sent me a message over Messenger, and he's like, good old... And he listed my former company's name.
Chippendales. And we'll call him Chippendales.
Yeah, we'll call him Chippendales for a moment. So I click on the link, and the link is basically a dead body found in the back of the woods right behind the old place I used to work at.
So immediately your first reaction is like, oh, crap, they're on to me.
My first thought is... should I get excited, or is there
should I run
something where I'd be like, should I get ready to get a suit on and then come to a funeral and be like, in your face? But it was very odd. He gave it to me, and we had a couple of inside jokes in there, and it was kind of funny because I shared it on Facebook and I tagged everybody I used to work with, and it in an odd way became like a company reunion on Facebook, because everybody I tagged read the article, go, they're like, oh crap. And then they start tagging people they used to work with. And before you know it, this like post has like 250 ex employees.
It'd be funny if it's like you start tagging everyone, and then it just turns into like, hey, how are you? How's the kids? Where are you living? What are you up to? Like, it's just like,
no joke, there'd be somebody like, oh my god, that's terrible. And then somebody replied to him, Debbie, I haven't seen you in years.
Here's a picture of me now. Duck face, you know. So,
meanwhile, this is all happening with a dead body.
So, so how did the did you follow up on the case? Is there any more? Like, was it just a body found? And how did they find it?
So, what we basically found out after time was like, as people were posting on it, somebody brought up there was somebody who's been gone missing for like 2 weeks in the Morristown area, and then it was later confirmed that they believe that's a guy. There was no, for what everything I've read in the article, it looks like the man was depressed, and all signs point to suicidal. The kind of interesting thing on how they found the body. So where I worked in Morristown was literally a mile from the George Washington Museum in New Jersey. I believe he stayed there quite a bit during the 1700s. So they do a lot of digs to kind of see like if they can find like old plates or anything that came from that era. And basically, as they've been digging around, they in the area in the backwoods, they kind of stumbled across the guy.
It's weird. It's weird.
So you're looking around for George Washington's spoon, and then all of a sudden you just turn your head. I don't think he's from the revolutionary times. I don't think they had iPhones back then.
Yeah, I mean, I always, you know, when you watch like any kind of like ID discovery thing, you know, you get sucked into something about some kind of case or whatever, or you know, like I just watched the Aaron Hernandez documentary and all that.
I gotta see that. It looks awesome.
It was good. I think if you kind of knew what was going on with him, like you kind of followed it, like I didn't find it like that shocking, like anything that really opened my eyes. Some of the footage, the security camera footage was interesting, but I wasn't like blown away, like I didn't know like a lot of it, but it was good. It was definitely good. But I mean, when you start watching those things, it almost feels like fiction in a way. Like you're like, that doesn't happen, you know, like that, you know, where does this happen? That's crazy. And then like, you know, like something like that's like, well, that happened, you know, like it's like, I remember I got called into, I had jury duty about, I don't know, 5 years ago, 6 years ago. And I'm sitting in jury duty, just wait, you know, hanging in the lobby or whatever. And they call every juror in, like there must have been, I don't know, 40 of us maybe in a room. They said, everyone come in the room. They say, look, we are looking for a jury for a rape, murder, and torture trial. I don't know. They were like, kind of like, and if you have any thing that would make you not participate in this, please come up and, you know, whatever, come up first or whatever. So it's funny. And so it turns out that trial, that case was about a block and a half away from my parents' house. So,
wow.
Yeah. Now it was, I looked it up. It was a case that happened like 20 years prior, and they were like retrying the guy and some new evidence, like on some new things, but it was still like, you know, like you think these things don't happen, especially when you have the, you know, when you're fortunate enough to live in an area that doesn't happen a lot, like it's always like, whoa, you know, like you, every documentary is like in a small town, blah, 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 you know, never happened. It's true. Like you, until it does happen, you're like, whoa, that's weird.
That was a guy screaming. I swear this 6-year-old redhead did it.
So,
yeah, I had a similar thing and all. I've only been called into jury duty once. And, you know, when they didn't like tell the case, like at first you had like the big room with everybody in it, and they're like, you know, we have a case that can last 2 or 3 weeks. So if somebody is unavailable to do it, you can walk out. That's a way to describe it. A lot of people went away, and this is kind of the time I kind of checked out with my job. So I'm like, I'll stick around for 2 to 3 weeks.
I mean, couldn't do
they
it.
They had because, to pay me.
I couldn't do it because of my job at the time. But I actually, like, as long as I would still get paid, like, I wouldn't mind being on jury duty at least one time in my life just to kind of see the whole process. I know it's supposed to be miserable, but I don't know.
Yeah, but I stuck in there, and I think it was probably about 40 of us left or something like that. And then they bring us in the room. And then they kind of say, oh, this is a murder trial. So, like, the second they give out the questionnaire, we're all looking at each other, and everybody's writing every single thing on the piece of paper to try to avoid a chance that you're stuck sequestered for, like, 6 months.
And right.
What do you watch on TV? Tons of CSI. I know so much about criminal investigations.
Well, it makes you wonder, right, like, what quality of, like, juror they're getting. You know what I mean? Like when they do get these cases, because a lot of people who do have jobs and might be like pretty well educated and they're working. I don't know. Like you have an image in your hand, like they might be like, what quality of people are they getting that are like, yeah, I'll do it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I don't know, but you may wonder if the jury are, I always wonder if the jury is like 12 normal people or is it like a bunch of whack jobs?
I think lawyers nowadays, especially when they do like bigger trials like that, they're part of their education is to kind of figure out who they want
right
on the case. Yep. I mean, basically they try to read bias, for lack of a better term,
exactly.
And
yep.
try to, you know, kind of lean on their side. I mean, that was one of the things that got brought up in the OJ trial, where Marcia Clark figured that black women wouldn't like OJ. And one of the reasons her thought process was is a lot of black women don't like it when black men date white women, right. or stuff like that. What they didn't figure out was OJ was pretty much loved by black women just as equally, and they didn't blink an eye to it. And it was something, by the time they figured it out, it's like, uh-oh.
Yeah. So Mike's murder has come to fruition. So Mike, your days are numbered. But let's keep casting. Let's get these episodes in while we have you.
Well, that's why I asked you to stop mentioning where I'm podcasting from every week.
Mike's podcasting live to us from Idaho, Mike.
Yes.
Oh, by the way,
potatoes, Scott.
By the way, big news in Verbal Shenanigans land. We had one download last week in Hawaii. We have reached the market that we have been struggling in, you know. So my one Hawaiian friend out there, please call the podcast because we would love to have you on.
Yeah.
Figure out how the hell you found us.
Like I said, it's a guy who felt bad that he took your Nintendo game for some reason, something that you forgot about for like 10 years. And he's finally like, you know what? This is the best way I could pay it back.
You know what's funny?
I can't find Dig Dug anywhere. So.
You know what's funny? I forgot about it for 10 years, and now I forgot what it was about again. Like, I still don't remember what game he stole from me. I'd have to go back and listen to that episode. But I sent Mike a picture of our downloads. The middle of the country just doesn't like us, guys. I don't know what you guys are doing out there, but we're good on the coast. We're doing good on the coast, mm-hmm. but the Midwest, you guys really don't like Verbal Shenanigans.
Yeah, we really got to figure out how to dive into the Rust Belt, Scott. I think that's the key way for us to be millionaire podcasters.
Well, wait till I unveil our new bit, Bible Verses with Brennan. We're just going to read.
That's awesome.
We're going to end every cast with 10 minutes of the good Lord's book. So it's great.
Praise.
Berlo, the reason we chose this to talk about this today also kind of related to our guests. So it is definitely guest time. We got something interesting. Who we got today?
Today, Scott, we're going to be talking with Dennis Kowalski, who is the president of Cryonics Institute. For those who are not aware, cryonics is the science of freezing bodies in the hope of finding a cure in the future and bringing people back to life. So we're actually going to be talking to him about the entire science and where their facilities are and who's there, and is it anything like we see on TV?
Yeah. I mean, we hear Ted Williams, I believe, was frozen, and I think Walt Disney was the rumor that they're frozen. So looking forward to it. It fits right into what we do here on the show, so let's give Dennis a call.
All right, Dennis. So happy for you to join our podcast here. I guess starting off, I mean, we're going to get into the actual institute, the science and all that, but I'm going to start this off in a weird way. Anytime we bring up like freezing humans, bringing them back, the first thoughts are always Futurama, Demolition Man, Jason X.
No one thinks about Jason X.
I'm a horror guy. I love Jason X. That's like top five Jasons, even though there's like 12 of them. But I just got to ask, with as silly as it sounds, like when you see things like this, are you like almost happy to see it? It's like, all right, people are thinking about this science, or is it almost frustrating? It's like, all right, this. You're kind of taking this in a weird direction that's not really getting to the point of what we're trying to do.
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on your podcast. It certainly what Hollywood does with the depictions of cryonics is pretty cringeworthy. To use a phrase that my children use, because, you know, they always try to sensationalize everything and take it in a different direction from the actual science, which I think is fascinating enough unto itself. We like the exposure. If people at least understand that, hey, this is real, this is actually happening. Some people see it in the movies. They say, okay, yeah, I understand it, from a movie perspective or whatever, but they don't actually believe that anyone's out there doing it, and that's where we come into play.
So you're saying Demolition Man is not factual. I find this hard to believe. Stallone looked great.
Right. So did Sandra Bullock, but there's always, and I guess that's with any storytelling, you're gonna have to make it interesting. Sometimes you have to change things up a little bit, but in Demolition Man, for instance, Sylvester Stallone was being implanted; memories were being implanted into his mind. And I don't see from a physics standpoint, from an actual science standpoint, how the mind can even work at sub cryonic temperatures, because there's no molecular movement, there's no movement, there's no neurons making connections, so there's no learning or consciousness whatsoever. So if you were to go into cryonic suspension, it would be like falling asleep without dreaming. You could be in suspension for 200 years, but from your perspective, it would be a blink of an eye, like popping out of a screen.
You don't know that. Stallone's brain's a little different than everybody else's. But so let me ask you. Okay, how does one how did you get into cryonics? Were you a science guy and led were you led down a path to studying this? Did you always have interest in it? How did this find you?
Well, I guess this goes back to how I thought as a youth. I was like every other little kid who finds out that Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny aren't real. You get depressed, you're a little bummed out, but I still I loved the awe of what is and isn't possible in science. You start learning things like about black holes and galaxies and everything, and so I was still, and to this day I'm in awe of real things, not just metaphysical things, but real things that are possible and on the cutting edge, when it comes to science. So I was always, the type of person looking for something fascinating and awe-inspiring, but still a skeptical-minded person who didn't want to just believe anything, So I read a lot of science fiction. One of my favorite magazines in the 80s, 70s and 80s was Omni magazine. I don't know if you're familiar with that. It brought a lot of heavy science down to the layman. And then later on, I saw a interview on Phil Donahue's show, and they had some cryonics advocates kind of getting skewered by the audience who was against them. And I thought, boy, these people are very logical, very reasonable, and approaching this from a very sound scientific pattern of thinking. And everyone else who was picking them apart, it was like, well, are we playing God, or should we do it even if we can do it? It smacked of something like, should we do heart transplants? It sounds like it's Frankenstein, but today, hundreds of people, thousands of people are alive because of it. So anyways, so that kind of put the hook in me. Then later I read a book called The Engines of Creation by Eric Drexler about molecular nanotechnology, fancy name for reverse engineering life itself, and how these things actually are possible. It's not like we have to think up something new like anti-gravity or time travel. This is things that happen in nature that we don't quite understand how nature does it. Once we do, we can reverse engineer, and then we should be able to bring people back and do a whole bunch of other fascinating things. Now, that's if there's something to bring back. That's if, if the body, the mind aren't completely deteriorated because of burial or cremation. If you freeze someone, the thought process goes, is that from a physics standpoint, nothing much happens. The molecules are locked in place. The molecules represent the DNA, which is a blueprint for you, and also all your nerves and synapses in your brain, which is your mind. So if we can save these things, There's nothing that says it's impossible to put back together. Very hard to do. We can't do it yet today, but it doesn't mean that the future can't. And that's the purpose. That's the whole point of Cryonics, is an ambulance ride to the future.
Hmm. So what is the Institute itself right now? Are we talking about a physical building with equipment in there? Is it like a future of what we want to do? What's currently in structure and what's being worked on?
Well, the Cryonics Institute has been around actually since 1974. So it was operating, you know, when I was just a little guy. Professor Robert Ettinger, who's now deceased and with us as a patient, he was actually a World War II hero, Battle of the Bulge and everything. He was a physics professor, and he read about the science fiction of cryonics. And he thought to himself, you know, what if you could actually do this, you know, and he added on all the, you know, equations and scientific principles and everything. And he actually looked at it and he wrote a book, a critical scientific book called Prospect of Immortality. Went on, sold a ton of books, and he thought someone else is going to start cryonics and this is going to be a great movement. And nobody did. So then he started the facility, and, with donors and, no public funds, all private donations. We got a building out in Clinton Township, Michigan. We're now working on our second building. We've got over 2,000 people signed up over the last 40 plus years, and we've got 187 people in suspension currently, and we have well over 150 pets. People want to, save their cats and dogs, and many tissue samples and stuff like that. So. And it's funny, when we started doing pet suspensions, cloning was not possible. But now several outfits are doing cloning of pets. So it's already starting to pay out. And another thing that's also started, you're starting to see a lot more of, is when we started, people are already talking about, freezing sperm, eggs, embryos, and stuff like that. Now they're talking, cryobiology is pushing into trying to freeze organs like hearts and livers and so forth, so we could store organ donations longer,
right,
and save more lives than that. But see, it's all a bridge to being able to save or freeze a whole organism, which is what we're doing right now.
So where do you house Stallone? No. first you ruined Demolition Man for me, then Santa and the Easter Bunny. I don't know if I could continue, but so is this facility like is this a job that entails someone in these facilities at all times? Is this something that is left alone? Is this a full-time gig? What, give us like a kind of peek behind the curtain on what goes on here.
Well, we currently have 3 full-time employees, actually 4, including myself, and then a whole host of volunteers and people who work, depending on part-time or whenever we need them. So we try to have someone at the facility at all times. The whole place is, very secure, wired with cameras and everything like that. Every single day, 40-plus years, we've measured the tanks, the liquid nitrogen tanks by hand. So there's no electric equipment that can fail. Everyone says, well, what happens if the refrigeration fails? It's not how it works.
Yeah.
The cryostats are large thermos bottles filled with liquid nitrogen, and they're insulated super well. And they're insulated so well, it takes like 6 months for all that liquid nitrogen to boil off and evaporate. Well, of course, we don't wait that long. We top them off every week. We've been doing so for 40 plus years without incident, but we measure them every day to see, how many inches it went down in evaporation, and we do that physically. So there's nothing that can break or malfunction. And we've been doing that for 40 plus years. The building, so the maintenance of the suspended people is not really a lot of work. It's getting them into the suspension that's a little harder. We have a process called vitrification, and I can go into that, the science of that. And then fielding questions like I'm doing, answering phone calls, signing people up, membership, and dealing with all the rest of it. But actual maintenance of the bodies, once they're in suspension, it's just a waiting game for the future to either happen or not happen.
interesting.
And when reading through the website, I'm seeing like some of the myths you talk about, and it brings up cryonics is not just freezing a dead body. For what I can see, like the goal is to kind of freeze them before they pass away. I'm just kind of curious right now of where are we at as in being able to do it? Is the kind of hinging point like laws that would say this could be suicidal, or is it the science of, well, we got to make sure when we freeze them, there's some capability of bringing them back? What's kind of the next stepping point here?
Well, sure. Let me clarify. We cannot freeze anyone who is not legally dead. That would, under current laws, that would be, you know, not good for us or the person. and we don't know if this is what, you know, what makes us different from a lot of other fringe movements or on the cutting edges is we're honest. We don't know if cryonics will work. So, you know, this is a last chance effort for people where there's no alternative, right? I mean, for anyone asking for a guarantee, you want a guarantee. You get buried or cremated, we know what's going to happen to you. You're going to be worm food. But if you step into the world of cryonics, we don't know the future. There's a lot of anecdotal evidence that, you know, things are improving, things are advancing. Stem cells, the ability to fix and repair and replace cells with your own cells, you know, within your body, you know, 3D biological printing, artificial intelligence, CRISPR-Cas9 genetic engineering, all these things are, you know, vindicating and validating what we're doing. So there is no guarantees, but we try to catch people as soon as possible after legal death. So it's very much like, you know, if one of us would have a heart attack right now, and your heart stops, what do? You call 911 and you start CPR. If failing that, if that doesn't work after about a half hour, most medical systems, I'm actually an emergency paramedic, right, that as my day job, you know, after that we give up because the odds are, with current technology, are nil. So what we do then at that point is we continue CPR, or you know, even if we get there and there's a small gap in time, we'll start CPR again, and we'll start, you know, we restart circulation and nutrients to the brain. We'll start cooling you right away. Cooling does a couple of things. It slows the metabolism down, and that's why in conventional medicine, you're starting to see a lot of therapeutic hypothermia, because slowing that metabolism down is also a great protector of the cells. The other thing it does is it buys you time. So everything, all the bad things that happen slow down because molecules slow down. And when things are colder, that's what cold is. And when you slow them down enough, essentially they stop. Everything is frozen. So we treat it like a cardiac arrest. We do CPR. We inject medications like blood thinners. We don't want clotting. We don't freeze you down to ice temperatures yet. We get you just, you know, above ice temperatures, so ice water, get you to the facility as soon as possible. Then we use like the equivalent of a heart-lung bypass perfusion machine, and we perfuse in a formula that was developed by a cryobiologist called CIVM1. It stays liquid colder than ice temperatures, and it also pushes the fluids and water out of your cells. The reason we want to do that is we don't want ice crystal damage, because ice crystals can crush the cells. So we get all the moisture out and kind of almost internally put like a biological antifreeze in you, for lack of a better word. And that protects you at these colder temperatures. Then we bring you down to liquid nitrogen temperatures, which is very, very cold. We're talking -451 Fahrenheit below zero, and that's where you stay pretty much unchanged until the future catches up, or doesn't, for that matter. You got nothing to lose, everything to gain. And one of the other myths is that this is just for rich people. It's not true. We have a lot of people who use standard life insurance, term life, whatever, and it's relatively inexpensive. And another thing is, people will say, well, they're scamming you. It's a big money-making scam. I'd like to see who's making money, because it's not me. We're a nonprofit. I lose money, if anything, working at this job. But we're a nonprofit, and not only are we a nonprofit, because a lot of nonprofits pay themselves, you know, generous salaries, but all of our records are open for financial scrutiny, and our leadership, you know, is comes from within the members. So it's like a co-op. The members democratically elect the directors, and the directors vote for the officers. And hence, I'm the president. I'm a member. I'm signed up. We all have a vested interest. And if they don't like how I'm running things, I get ousted, and someone else comes in there and runs things.
So let's say somebody is frozen and they're paying for this, and years down the line, their funding runs out. What do you guys do in a case like that?
Okay, so how do we handle that? That's why we have to charge a decent amount of money up front. We charge $28,000, and a lot of people get a little sticker shock from that. But think about it. We're right. keeping you perpetually frozen for Lord knows how long. You know. So what we do with that money is the bulk of it gets invested in index funds, kind of like a giant endowment. And no one can spend that money. That money just generates interest and compounds in the stock market, and the interest on that helps run our perpetual overhead, things like our taxes and utilities and salaries and the liquid nitrogen, for instance. So we really, you don't run out of money. The only way we'd run out of money is if the economy crashed, and I'm not talking about like a recession. We're talking about long-term crash, and then if that's the case, it doesn't matter where your money is anyway. You might as well be hiding in a cave because it's the end of the world.
Yeah.
So we're as safe as the world's economy is safe, the way we're invested. And now, back when we started in 1974, it's worth noting that the typical average American funeral was $600, and we were $28,000. We're still $28,000, and the typical funeral is now $10,000 to $12,000 on average. So adjusted for inflation, we've actually gone down. So, you know, substantially in price. But we can do that because of scales of economy. We've got so much money sitting in the banks generating interest to pay for the, you know, and the buildings and everything else so that we can keep this scientific experiment, if you will, going as long as we need to.
I find it interesting. I'm looking through the site. For a lot of things, like we talked to Zoltan Istvan, who's like really big in transhumanism and trying to keep people living longer and stuff like that. I see the site literally addresses morality and religion straightforward by doing something like this. Was that like a conscious decision, or is there like a lot of pushback when you say, hey, our goal is trying to bring people back from to cure their diseases and stuff like that?
Well, you know, you always cross the line of, you know, upsetting a lot of people when you start talking about bringing people back to life. You know, we start to infringe on maybe people's religious ideas of the afterlife and so forth. But really, when you think about it, it's no different than when you do CPR on somebody. You know, are we resurrecting people when we do CPR? I mean, are they, when we bring them back, are they soulless zombies? You think of all the moral qualms and everything. No, we're just happy to get, you know, so-and-so back from CPR. So that's why we fight the good fight, and that's why we have emergency medicine. So, we feel that we have to kind of get ahead of that and let people know. You can be a fundamentalist Christian, Orthodox, Jewish, Muslim, or atheist. In fact, agnostic. In fact, we have members that are all of the above. And it's just the same as you can be any one of those things, and you can choose a heart transplant, or you could say, you know what, my belief systems say I'm not going to get a heart transplant. Well, then that's fine. You know, that's your choice. It's still free country. You know, it's last I remember. So if you want to sign up for cryonics, you sign up for it. And if you don't think it's a good idea, then you don't. And, you know, we don't push it on anyone. Of course, we'd like to see more people doing it because there's strength in numbers and the more money that goes into building this life raft, the stronger it is. And then that, I think, will push more into the research side of things. But I'll be honest, I don't think revival or bringing people back is going to come necessarily from us. we're the vehicle to get you to the future, but it's going to be regular modern medicine. It's going to be these things that I mentioned, like stem cell regeneration and artificial intelligence and genetic engineering, all these things that are going to happen anyhow outside of cryonics that are going to supplement and help to bring people back in the future, if that ever happens. And I, my guess is it will. I mean, look at how much has happened in the last 100 years versus the last 10,000 years as far as the exponential nature of scientific discovery. How many things were impossible just 20 years ago?
Now, are you personally going to be freezing yourself when your time comes?
Yes, I am signed up. My family is signed up. You know, it's not something that I look forward to because it means I'm going to have to be legally dead.
Yes.
I'd much rather be put out of business by the life extension people who are talking about, you know, living longer in the first place. But, you know, when you look at the alternative, you know, certain oblivion and cremation or burial, I'm not, like, afraid of death. I was a firefighter. I served in the military. So it's not like I'm terrified of death, but in a pragmatic sense, I think we all, you know, we look both ways before we cross a road. We don't stick our arm in the lion cage. So there is a certain healthy fear of death.
Yeah.
And that being said, if your alternative, you have, you know, zero, it's a Pascal's wager that it only makes sense. A relatively small amount of life insurance money, whoever your life insurance company is, will buy you a ticket to a possible future. And it just makes sense. And the other thing is, if I'm the president and the leadership, I have to be a member myself. Right. That's in our bylaws. And that's a very clever way of keeping whoever's running the organization, making sure that they have a vested interest and they're not just going to, hey, there's a lot of money here, let's hit the road, Jack, or something negative, you know.
Now, the people who freeze a pet, like, I'm assuming they're going to freeze themselves too. Do they have, like, a contingency plan? Like, if they, you know, if one day they are able to bring them back, are they bringing their pet back at the same time? I can't imagine them freezing their pet and not themselves.
Yeah, I mean, some people can afford, the pets are, you know, less expensive. It's small, they're smaller.
Right.
So, you know, maybe they do the pet and then they're going to do themselves. So a lot of people who do have the pets suspended also are signed up for suspension themselves. But then there's some people who have no interest in it for themselves, just for their pets, because maybe they're going that cloning route. They want to be able to clone their pet or something like that. So it's all across the board, pretty much.
Hmm. Well, now, do you guys do freezing the heads, like kind of like Walt Disney? Or is that just a myth?
That's just a myth, yeah. So I think where that myth got started is supposedly, I talked to the guy who fielded the phone call many years ago. He's actually in suspension too. I forget what his name was now. Anyways, he was an early pioneer in cryonics, Bob Nelson. And he says he got a phone call from someone from Walt Disney's office when Walt had cancer, and he was interested in knowing more about the process, and then he never got a call back, and that was the end of it. And then Walt died and he was buried, but once that rumor got started, it just never went away. So a lot of people think Walt Disney had been frozen, but that's actually not uncommon for very, you know, rich and famous and wealthy people to call us because they're interested, or someone in their office to call us, and then they just never follow up. I think Larry King has been talking publicly for a long time, Simon Cowell, a whole bunch of these people talking about getting frozen. That's what they want to do, but they actually haven't signed up. And that happens a lot. A lot of people have aspirations to be frozen, but they just never get around to signing up. And I think that there's a reason for that, a psychological reason. It's the same reason a lot of people don't have their wills filled out. And, I'll tell you an interesting statistic. I heard somewhere that 40% of people who are divorced haven't even changed their life insurance policies away from their spouse, who they might not have any interest in funding whatsoever. You know? Right. And that's just because people think they're not going to die, you know, tomorrow. And, you know, no one thinks they're going to get hit by a bus tomorrow. But it, unfortunately, it right now happens to all of us. So it really is something to think about and plan for. Same thing with wells. Hardly anyone, less than half the Americans that need wells, have wells or powers of attorney or healthcare directives filled out because, yeah, who wants to think about death, you know?
Hmm. Now, when some people...
Even if it is logical, even if it's the sound and right decision, you know?
Now, when these people sign up for cryonics, do they get, like, special clauses in their wills to kind of say, okay, if I come back, I put some cash on the side here. If I come back in 100 years, so I have actual financial stakes when I come back?
There is some very affluent people who have signed up and have separate trusts, a thing called a legacy trust or a dynasty trust, I think it's called, where in certain areas you can have a money invested in the market and it keeps growing and growing and growing. So not only will you come back in the future, you'll come back obscenely rich.
It's gonna suck for the guy who put his baseball cards and Beanie Babies in a safe and was like, I'm gonna be fine with this.
Right.
So what is the future of the company here as far as where you guys are currently at? What are, like, the goal? Is it basically to remain status quo? Is it to grow membership? What is the future vision of the Institute?
Well, certainly we'd like to grow because, you know, growth in numbers, it makes us stronger. The life raft gets bigger and bigger, the more stable it becomes, both financially and as far as public opinion goes. A couple of our things that we're working on is we're trying to find better cryopreservation formulas that are less damaging on the tissues, that protect the tissues better. And that's not just us that are doing that. That's the whole science of cryobiology. Anyone who's looking into organ preservation is working in that field. So we'd like to make sure there's less and less damage going in, so there's less repairs on the future end. The idea is that the last people frozen will be people that are going to be frozen or cryopreserved, years before, just a few years before they're actually able to revive people. So I'm guessing that they're going to be preserved under much better conditions, much better technology and formulas and so forth. And it's going to be easier to bring them back, and they're going to work their way back. So last in, first out, work their way back to the oldest cryopreservations, what we call straight freezes, where they had no protectant formulas. And even before that, we might bring back animals and pets first before we bring back humans. And even before that, we might run everything through advanced AI computer simulation so that we can find all the problems before we actually start applying it to the actual biological tissues and humans and pets. So we have the least amount of damage. But we do have a lot of clauses to protect ourselves. For instance, let's say I'm lost at sea or completely, burned up in a fire. Well, and now I allocated this money to the Cryonics Institute in the form of my life insurance beneficiary. Do I still want that money paying for something that's not going to happen? Well, there's a couple things you can do. I can have a rider and says that that money would go to my family, or it would go to a charity, or wherever I want it to go. Or I could say, no, I want no matter what, I want the money to go to the Cryonics Institute. Or I wanted to go to Cryonics Institute for my brother or sister or son or whoever, my spouse, so that they can get cryogenically suspended. And we encourage people to do the latter, not because we're looking for more money, but it turns out that a lot of families, the light bulb goes on in their head and they say, oh, well, we'll just bury grandpa and we get the money. So, so that you don't want to provide a disincentive for you to get cryopreserved. The way I've set up my current estate is I've got a lot of money going to my family, and a small portion of that, about $50,000, is going to cryonics. And if my family actively stands in the way, tries to go after the cryonics company or, buries me when they don't need to, then everyone gets disinherited. but if they do what I, they honor my wishes, they get the bulk of the money anyhow, and then Cryonics gets enough to do what it needs to do.
Nice.
Very cool. Dennis, we can't thank you enough for giving some time with us and going through everything here. If people are interested in whether the science or want to talk to you or are looking at possibly doing this, where can they contact you?
Well, you can go to our website. It's cryonics, plural, cryonics.org, not com, but org for organization. If you go there, there is pretty much everything you need to learn about us. We have toll-free numbers. You can call and ask questions, or all the information is right on the website. If you want to see what the facilities look like on the inside, if you're curious, we got all kinds of pictures, and there's actually a media tab for people in who do the podcasts or interview us. If you want to look, there's high definition photos of the inside of the facilities. We got video. We've got you name it. We try to put together. We had 40 years to try to think up every problem that could go wrong. And we try to address them all and everything that people want to make things go better. So if you're interested in more information, yeah, just come to our website and check us out.
Awesome. And I guess before you go, let's say this all works out well. You pass away a couple years from now. You wake up 500 years in the future. What do you think is the first thing you're going to do?
The first thing I'd do is probably, check on my family, find out if they made it through, and family and friends. I think that's the most important thing right now, and I think that'll still be the most important thing in the future. Barring that, I'll probably have a nice glass of scotch. Enjoy the future.
You ever have a 500-year-old scotch? Dennis, thanks so much, man, and take care. All right, Mike, you going to freeze yourself now?
I mean, it's not my first thought. I just fear that the world would be too saddened when I go, so they'll just force me in, and I'll still be wake up and like, what's going on? They're like, you're back, Mike!
Again, we tapped into this like an episode or two ago. You have this, you have this fantasy of millions and billions of people just who could not live without you, who you get off a plane are rooting for you and there to meet you. I think you have a fame fantasy.
Are you sure it's just a fantasy, Scott?
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure.
I'm going to look outside and figure this out. So.
start taking shit off your walls and signing in and see how much you can sell it for.
I can go get the mace over there I hung up a while back.
I see Philly's Monopoly behind you. Did Berlew actually play this?
Well, oh my god, I got the thimble that Berlew used.
There's no way you ever used a thimble. Don't lie to the audience.
No, that was my go-to in regular Monopoly.
Thimble. I thought you meant like you actually used a thimble, because I don't think anybody actually uses those.
No. My Izzy's got a collection of thimbles that she got from her grandmother and mother, but like actually like sewing? No.
So, I mean, I know we have talked about this before, but our guest kind of inspired me to dive maybe a little deeper into. Do you know, we're going to keep it nice and dark here today, do you know what you want done with your body when you're gone?
I think I just wanted like nothing huge, nothing special. I don't need a gravestone, anything like that. I'm the kind of guy when I go, it's like, don't worry, you don't have any requirements to come visit,
right?
The grave, but, or something like that. Like literally, like put me out in the field and just go.
Like Frank from Always Sunny, put me in the trash.
I mean, to a lesser degree, yeah, kind of like that. But.
So you want to be? Do you want to be cremated? Do you want to be buried? Or you have no idea yet? You want to be cryogenically frozen?
I've been toying with cremation because, like I said, I didn't. Just the thought of paying thousands of dollars just to put me in the ground. I mean,
Think of cremation like this. You know how you like to melt ice and pour water over ice and it just goes away. Ooh. That's kind of what the cremation is. It's kind of happening to you.
They could make an herbal tea out of my ashes and share it with the world.
Well, personally, I don't know what I want done. And, you know, it's kind of like at some point in this life, you have to think about, you know, I'm going to be gone. What are my loved ones going to do with me? I grew up Catholic for the most part, and everybody pretty much got buried. But, you know, like, cremation seems to kind of, like, make sense. But cremation's kind of, like, a little scary because it's, like, it's so final, right? Like,
there's no coming back from that.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if they cryogenically froze your ashes and somehow they brought you back? You're just like in a petri dish. Like, well, what the heck am I supposed to do in here?
You come back as a cigar, you know, like.
Oh, I know this feeling.
So I don't know exactly what I want to do. You know, I find the whole buying a bazillion-dollar casket ridiculous and stupid. But I started to look into some options. Now, I know we talked a little bit, but I looked at what you can do legally with your body.
Important.
There are a couple things you can do. Refrigeration, which we know. We just talked to Dennis about. Ice or dry ice. You can refrigerate your body. Mike, you can embalm your body, which would, you know, it would replace all the fluids in your body and basically make you, like, chemically preserve. You into that?
I mean, what they can do is, since there's not a huge crowd there and all, since I'm a huge Redskins fan, they can, like, put me in all my gear and, you know, just pump all the chemicals in there. I mean, you don't have to worry about somebody taking my seat because, you know, nobody shows up there. Maybe a couple of Eagle fans will run up to the balcony and start chucking me around. But other than that, that'd be cool.
Just put you in this pose, like hand on your forehead, like miserable. Like, just there,
they brought back RG3. What?
So, Mike, there's embalming, but, you know, it's 2020. There's now eco-embalming.
Oh, like composting?
Well, apparently it's preserving your body not with chemicals, but with essential oils. So now you're not polluting the environment at all. You're eco-friendly.
I mean, kind of when I'm in that spot, it's not really going to affect me if the environment goes to hell, if you got to be perfectly honest.
Yeah. But I don't know, maybe you have, like, grandchildren down the line, you want the earth to stay, and your nasty body is polluting and messing things up. I don't know.
I mean, you are right. There are a lot of things in my body I don't like to discuss that shouldn't be in the earth, so.
What about plastination? That's where plastics replace the body's water and fat. You're allowed to do that.
So you, like, fill me with Coke bottles or something?
No, I don't know about that. But, you know, I thought I had known a lot of the ways you can die or the ways you're allowed to be buried. But there's a lot more than I thought. You could be you could have a wood casket, a metal casket, or a stone casket. You could have an eco-friendly woven willow casket for a green burial. Apparently, that is very legal.
What does that entail? Was it made of, like, tofu or, like, grass?
Well, I'm looking at them right now. They're biodegradable. Okay. One's made out of bamboo. One's made out of seagrass. That might be the way to go, though. Like, they're actually not bad looking. They kind of look like a wicker basket. Like, you're being placed in a big wicker basket.
So I'm basically going to be, my last days on Earth, I'm going to be like a bowl of yarn, basically, is what you're telling me.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't have to be your last days. If you want to embrace the ball of yarn thing now and
just live I could see myself at like 85. I'm by myself. I'm like, these are my last days. I'm going to live them the way I live life.
You could be wrapped in a burial shroud or a blanket. So basically, like, you know, like the old time movie, like where Princess Leia died. I like how I said old time movies and then used the most modern
one of the most recent movies that's still in the theaters right now.
Like my first thought was Braveheart, and then Princess Leia popped in my mind. Like that was more that was more relatable. But you could be put in a blanket and buried. You could be put in a stone crypt, which I think that's up your alley. Like a big stone crypt, like
yeah,
you know, where obviously the millions and millions of people come and go, Bertha, we miss you, and you know, like buried, like bow down to you.
See, I figure when I go, I'm going to ask my fans to bury me with jewels because, you know, I deserve them. So, yeah, if I want like a really thick stone kind of cauldron so everybody's like, I miss you, but I'm not going to steal your ancient artifacts from you, Berlu.
What are your thoughts of a mausoleum?
I mean, I'm not that egotistical, Scott. But...
I have two great aunt, my great uncle are born, Jesus Christ, are buried.
They were born. That's gotta be petrifying. Why are we giving birth here?
That's the worst origin story ever. They were born in a mausoleum. No, they were buried in a mausoleum, and I found it weird. I mean, maybe because it wasn't like what I was used to, and like that was their final, that was the last place like we left. Was the mausoleum, but I thought that was a little weird. I don't like the building aspect to it. Like, oh, I'm basically part of a structure. I don't know.
And then I got to figure you got to have furniture in there because people are going to visit, and like, I guess some people want to sit down while they're remembering you or something like that. I mean, that's got to be like creepy. And
apparently, you could be sewn into a mushroom suit.
There's so many questions to that.
I don't know. I don't know either. And, of course, I don't know a lot because the link that says mushroom suit isn't working. So it's kind of up to...
Clearly, it's legit. Clearly.
Right. Well, because everything we do here is like 100% researched and fact-checked.
like, what kind of mushrooms are we talking about in that scenario? Is it like very special, like... Asian burial mushrooms, or are they just like grabbing any fungus and shoving it onto you?
Maybe it's like those Mario mushrooms when you grow when you hit them or eat them or whatever. That's a good question. Does Mario eat the mushroom?
I don't know. I guess he doesn't, because that means he eats a flower too, and he eats a star in that scenario.
We talked about this. You could be buried in a pod that grows a tree, which I think is pretty cool, until they cut that tree down to make more room for cemeteries.
Yeah. Malls are coming back. Sorry.
So you can be cremated into ashes, which we know. You can be liquefied with alkaline hydrolysis, which is liquid cremation, Berlu.
So basically Breaking Bad, putting me in a plastic barrel and aciding me?
Yeah, like maybe like you would be in like a vial. Like we would make you into liquid and like every once in a while. I don't know. Bless people with Berlu every once in a while. I don't know. We can get creative with it.
I could see a lot of people wearing me around while I'm dead, you know?
I know. In your mind, everyone's trying to get that holy water, you know?
Yeah, they're like rioting to just get a piece of me. I mean, maybe that, like, the plan is I'm going to get buried, but they're so sad and they miss me so much, they, like, rush the funeral, and then they just grab me and rip me apart so they can have a piece of me. Forever.
I'm picturing you like on your deathbed, you know, like leaving things to people, and you're like, I will leave my liquid body to my great grandchildren. And they're like, God damn it. Like, it's not like in your mind, you thought I was going to be
money.
you can be buried in a compost heap. which I think is pretty much being thrown in the trash. Like, just
there was no thought into that. That was literally, I didn't like that uncle. That's how they figured that out.
You could be buried in a green cemetery, which, like we were talking about before, you could plant your ashes. You could be freeze dried, like maybe astronaut ice cream. You could be the Viking send off, which I told you I would be interested in, but it's not legal in the U.S. It's legal in most of the world, though, where they light you on fire and you go into the sea.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're in Jersey. You're close by the shore. I mean, how far you got to be out to be international waters? Is that like six? It's like 6 miles, something like that.
What about being burned in an open air pyre? Like, you know, like we just light you on fire, which I think is okay.
Well, I wouldn't mind it, but you've been trying to do it since even while I'm alive.
You wanted this.
Get away from me. Get that gasoline away from me. On the barrels.
We talked about this one years ago, but the Tibetan sky funeral is sky burial is pretty interesting, where they take your body to the top of mountains and they let the vultures just eat away at you. What are you into that?
That would be epic. I mean, we got Stone Mountain around here, but it's like touristy, so that might get a little weird for the people who come up in like summertime where they're going to see that laser light show we talked about earlier this year, the Confederate laser light show.
So, Burlo, you said you were maybe thinking about cremation. There's a couple of things they can do with you after cremation. I thought that you might be interested in.
Okay,
you could be made into a vinyl record that plays your favorite music.
Yeah, but I'm gonna pick a crappy song, and then somebody's gonna like. He's super pissed.
You're gonna be the my
uncle. I hate hearing bop.
You're gonna be in a garage sale in a crate. Would you like to be jewelry? Like, would you like your relatives wearing little pieces of you?
I mean, I guess it could be cool, a little locket or something like that. I mean, something tasteful. I don't want to be like a toe ring or anything like that.
You would definitely be a toe ring. What about if you were like a glass sculpture? They make little hummingbirds and things like that with your ashes in the glass sculpture.
Can't hear you.
Nope. Can you hear me?
Now you're back.
I'm back. Yeah. Glass sculpture. What do you think?
So what happens? So they turn me into ashes, and then they turn the ashes to glass?
Yeah, or just like sticky inside of it. I don't really know. They're showing a hummingbird. I can't see any ashes, so you could be like a glass sculpture.
Can I get buried in a hummingbird? That sounds pretty cool. You know, my spirit just flying around a million miles a minute? Get some nice nectar? That'd be awesome.
This is weird. They make.
Can we make that happen?
They make photo frames. Like the frames are made out of your ashes. I think that's just like you're just a product now that someone's like eventually like, this is outdated.
That's basically how IKEA gets rid of their employees.
What about a shotgun shell?
That might be pretty epic, actually. I mean, especially considering I'm in Georgia and I hear them half the time, I could totally see myself getting lifted off there.
I think this could be cool. You could be put into a firework and just like, boom, like exploded on the 4th of July or something like that. What about that?
I mean, what can go possibly wrong with that? I mean, but the worst would be if like they turn you into like a shotgun shell or firework and it ends up being like a blank. You know what I mean? Like they shoot you up and nothing happens. Oh, come on!
You could be an underwater reef that provides shelter for ocean life. You could be put into one of those.
That would be epic. Then I can finally get into the next Dora or the Nemo and Dory series. Could get into one of them movies. And
so you think in Finding Nemo 3, Dead Burlo is going to be the new character that everyone falls in love with, and the kids are just like, oh my God, this is great.
I feel kids would really love the dolls of my dead body. And, you know, we'll teach everybody a lesson in the end. It'll be a nice tearjerker.
Right. What about mixed into ink for tattoos? So, Burlo, like, if you go, I could get you, like, inked onto my body and be like, Berlo's in me forever.
That's exactly what I want. I am going to jump off a building right now, so you have to do it by next week. That'll be your shenanigans showdown.
What if I get the Verbal Shenanigans logo made from you tattooed into my arm?
I have become one with the podcast.
All of a sudden I start like acting like you, like it's like a it's like a movie.
Your wife's looking at you like, why are you making all these voices when dogs come by? Why? I don't know.
Why are you watching this Dukes of Hazzard marathon? You don't even like this show.
Yes, I do. It's great.
You could be put into different urns, Burley. You could be in a scattering urn that is a birdhouse, and the birds just spread you around. You could be a clock. You could be a ring engraved with your fingerprint. You could be a three-dimensional wood piece that hummingbirds and that are part of flowers. You could be an hourglass where we just keep turning you over.
Finally, I can rest. Oh, God damn it. Now I got another minute.
I'm falling backwards.
There goes my leg.
There's just, you could do pretty much anything you want. I think a lot of things are more legal than you think after you're cremated or buried. So,
okay, how about this? We chop up my body. And then on Halloween, there's a scavenger hunt to put me back together.
What about
every year?
What about mummification?
I don't know. There's something about I watch enough horror movies to just say, it won't turn out right, you know?
Brother, what about scattering your ashes with a drone? just spewing.
We can put me on the wrong one. I'm in over in Iraq shooting down people.
We can get Aaron from last week, the Red Bull pod, just to throw your ashes all over the place. That might be kind of cool.
That'd be epic. That'd be so sweet.
Well, Mike, I mean, there's a lot of options for you and I. I don't really know what I want to do, but I don't know. Maybe some of these will turn you on to something new you can do with yourself after, you know, you are gone one day. So I don't know. Maybe you could be a tea light where it's a candle and we just light you on fire every day.
Ooh, I would like that. You know, every day, it'd be like the Gwyneth Paltrow candle.
would you rather be mixed in your ashes into a paint like you could paint things with, or would you rather be cryogenically frozen?
Probably frozen, because I don't know people with art skills and I don't want to be a stick figure for the rest of my life.
We have a natty bumper cars making little stupid cartoons out of your,
paint. Why am I a dragon? What the hell? What's that have to do with the bumper cast?
Oh, well, I mean, I don't know. Maybe we'll figure it out one of these days what we want, don't want us. But I think it's time to go. It was a dark episode today. We started with Conor McGregor, and then we went from dead bodies to cryogenically frozen to figuring out what we want done with our bodies. So, Berlo, on that segue, anything to promote before we go?
Yeah, with all these dead bodies, let me talk about food right now.
Oh, food.
I'm going to talk about a restaurant brewery I went to a couple of days ago. Really nice people. I'll promote them on there. It's called Hop Sticks. It's in Chamblee, Georgia. They have like an Asian fusion restaurant, and they do the same thing with their beers there. I had a craft. I had some Japanese lagers with some jasmine and all different rice beer. It just so unique and amazing. I'm definitely bringing the wife back there. Just such a great ambiance, right in the middle of town. Highly recommend them. Check them out. The name is Hop Sticks. That's HOPSTIX.
All right, and I am going to quickly promote. I haven't promoted this in a while, but we once a month I throw a Verbal Shenanigans comedy show. It is free to the public. That's right, free. And I always load it with good comics. So we are coming up. It's been a little while because Christmas and the holidays and whatnot. So we are coming up on the 30th of January. with another stacked lineup with headliner Richard Schultes, my good friend Mike Ciccoli, good friend Lonnie Bray, and now I just added a guy named John Kirshner on the show. So it's always a good time. You can come out and support. It's just a great restaurant with the most amazing beer in the state of New Jersey at Tap House 15. Make your reservations. There are a couple seats left. And finally, let's promote us real quick. We are not only just on whatever you're listening to us on now. We're on a couple other things. iTunes, Stitcher, Discovery County Network, ComingRightUp.org, Denville Radio. So our show is out there if you want to go check out us plus some other podcasts that are on the same platform and other interesting things, guys. The best thing you can do is share our show with your friends, share with your family, share with your grandma before you turn her into paint. You know. but that's it, guys. The best thing you can do is leave us a review on iTunes. It helps that podcast get out there. Check out the BS Podcast Network. They have a lot of shows and whatnot, and they help us out a lot. So other than that, that is it. Life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. Peace.
Later.
The snow glows white on the mountain tonight. Not a footprint to be seen. A kingdom of isolation. And it looks like I'm the queen. The wind is howling like this swirling storm inside. Couldn't keep it in, heaven knows I tried. Don't let them in, don't let them see. Be the good girl you always have to be. Conceal, don't feel, don't let them know. Well, now they go. Can't hold me back anymore.